I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello again, and welcome to the Deirdre O'Kane podcast with SJ, Sarah Jane Drummy in Madrid, and Eva B, Eva Berthesel in London. Thanks for joining us.
Eva, how was your trip?
Yes, because we missed a week because I was in Budapest.
Yes.
And for all the concerns and fears of spending time on my own, which I said to you, I haven't done in a very long time, for any length of time. Sure, listen to it. It was great.
Well done, Fab.
I loved it. Don't get me wrong. Of course I miss my family. Of course I miss my children. And of course it was a delight. My heart burst when I saw them. I have to say, the being on my own bit, when a few pals went, oh no, you might be, just look after yourself now. You might, you know, look after the mental health when you're on your own now. No, apartment. I was very productive at the first week of quarantining. So I used that week to finish my script. I got my head down and I had no distractions. So it was the most productive week.
Oh, that's amazing. What a result.
Amazing. What a result. Finished filming as well. I'm only back, you know, a few days, and Half five, they woke this morning.
Yeah, that's just a permanent state.
So, you know, the tiredness is just constant.
It is.
Five.
Living with it.
Yeah, five.
Five is so...
It's a pretty obnoxious,
It's the middle of the night. It's not the
morning. Yeah, it is. And also, and it's half five, the door swung open. Hi, everybody, I'm up. Woo, come on. Can I get my tights on? Here's Bunny. I'm going to whack you on the head. I'm going to open the blinds so the neighbors can see in. I'm going to turn the light on. Can I try on all your jewelry? Do you want some lipstick? Can I brush your hair? It's like, oh my God, it's half five.
I actually feel ill. Memories, I feel ill. So are you going to bed very early at night?
I go to bed at 10.
You have to, don't you?
I can't function otherwise.
No.
Sometimes I used to stay up, even though I knew I had to go to bed, and I still do this. Sometimes I stay up very late because I just love the peace and quiet of the house when they're all gone to bed. And I just sometimes go, I might just sit down now and watch or read something and just enjoy the quiet.
My mother stays up till midnight, half 12 sometimes in the morning. And my dad goes to bed really, really early. And she is she's just a night owl. And she'll just stay up tidying, foostering. I have a bit of that in me as well, the foostering.
This brings me to my question. Are we destined to become our mothers? Because you said you like your mother, you fooster quite a lot. And I have noticed, not that I would have called it foostering, but when I'm in your company, in wherever you're either living or staying, you are constantly tidying. You're constantly wiping surfaces and putting things away, and the chat is going, and you like to keep on the go as you're chatting. And
I do.
That's like your mum.
Yes, it is. That is a trait. Definitely.
That's a good trait. It's a good trait. You're not idle. You don't see you sitting down with the crisps like me.
I know. I have the idle moments, but when I feel like everything is...
And that, by the food string, do you mean the constant tidying away?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
a great habit.
I like things to
organize.
Put away.
You are organized.
You're
an organized person.
What traits do you have, like your mother's?
Well, timekeeping. I can't stand being late, but it rolls into me getting stressed if I feel like things are running late, if people are making me late, if I'm going to be late. And there's a running joke, like with my mum, that if she's traveling, she gets quite, like she'll pack a week in advance and there'll be conversations about what she's going to pack. She won't mind me saying this because it is literally a running joke. She'll be talking about what she's going to pack about a month in advance, and then the packing will start a fortnight to a week in advance. And then if you tell mum that the flight's at 4 o'clock, she'll want to be at the airport at 10 o'clock, just so she's there. that she's there. I spend a good 7 hours just being in the airport, just so there's no fear of her missing her flight. It's just like, and she'll think of every eventuality. But what if there's a problem with the train? But what if the taxi gets a flat tire? But what if we realize we've forgotten our passports and we have to go back on ourselves? Like, she'll think of absolutely everything. And it's obviously rubbed off on me, because Ross has now started saying to me, have you packed? It, like, 2 days before I'm due to travel. And he'll say it with a smile on his face, because he knows it in my head. I'm packing in my head. But
do you make lists?
No, I'm actually not that anal when it comes to the packing bit, but the traveling bit, checking, like, I found myself being quite sort of OCD about it. Like, I kept rechecking my pickup time just to make sure if I definitely got that pickup time right. Knowing that I had, I was like, and that's exactly what my mother would do. No, it's still 1:45. I checked it 10 times already. Yep.
And I'm the polar opposite. I just don't check enough, and I make a lot of mistakes.
Do you?
I like, there's a lot of appointments that I decide, I glance at the phone and I go, half one, I'm in the thing. And I've read it wrong. It's one. And I've decided, and the next thing, there's a phone call and, do your appointments at one. Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. And then I'm hysterical and in a panic going, I'm so sorry, that was half one. And I seem to make a lot of mistakes. And I don't know. I've had this discussion. I'm, as I said before, I'm a little bit older than both of you. But there's a change now. I'm a woman of a certain age. I've reached a point, you know, it's almost like you go from baby brain, which is a fog, to menopause brain, which is a fog. And so therefore you're just permanently in a fog. Like, there might've been a small window where I was quite sharp, but that's gone now. And I'm back to sort of the fog where I just seem to, like, I mislay things a lot. I get times wrong. So now I'm in a bit of a panic. I'm putting everything. I have the Google Calendar going and I'm checking it a lot. Yeah. But I still miss things. I still forget the odd appointment. It's shocking. And you know, they were mentioning lists. Like, I think lists are really smart. And all of my life, I'm a person who needed to make lists, but didn't. And still hasn't really learned to make lists and double check them, because there's a little rebel in me going, fuck that. That's just too organized. I'm not going to do it. Pathetic. But then I have to make elaborate excuses. I mean, the excuses, the elaborate stories that I come up with for people. Like, you know, I'm mortified for myself. I'm mortified on my own behalf that I'm so inefficient.
Do you mean you lie?
You lie to people?
Okay, call it what you want. I lie. but yeah, and you know, then of course there's the, how far do you lie? Do you say people are sick? That's low. That's very low. Do you know what I mean? How low do you go in the lying? Oh, there was a bit of a crisis here. Crisis covers a lot. A bit of a crisis here. There was a meltdown in this house. Oh, things went a bit pear-shaped here. So sorry.
Oh no, we won't trust her anymore.
No, we won't.
Not at all.
No, because when I'm late for the next recording of the podcast, we're like, oh Jesus, there was a bit of a meltdown. You'll know that actually she was just late for something. She's not telling us about.
She just didn't bother checking her calendar.
Didn't bother her hours to check her appointments. I don't think I could have enough lists, and yet I still don't make lists. And I've decided many times, I'm going to make lists. I bought the books, bought the notebooks, having the pens and had them.
And what about your motherly traits?
Oh my God, where would I begin? Like, my mother is such a huge personality and a complex person. And I am quite like her. I am like her a lot, and yet I'm very, very different. So I don't know, the good traits, the bad traits, all of them. I think I have all of them. Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? Because you spend a lot of your life examining your parents, don't you? Once you get to a certain age, you examine your parents, and you put and especially if you end up doing jobs like we do, which are like, say, you're actors or whatever you're writing, you know, you're always studying the human condition, and therefore you're always studying your own habits and your own ways of living and where they come from. And you know that nurture is a huge part of how you behave, so how you were raised, so therefore you're constantly judging your own parents, I guess. Now, I try to be very kind. I think I've got good parents, but of course I judge them and everything they do, but it seeped into my head recently, you know, that our children are going to judge us as well. And, you know, they're going to, and everything I do, they're going to question and go, she did this and she did that and she did that and she didn't let me do that. Oh, God. It's very hard.
Well, when you have kids, you your own kids, you see your parents in a completely different light, don't you? You go, hang on a second. I get it now. You know,
I think you understand.
You understand that,
responsibility. And the parenting never stops. It'll never
how
stop.
How hard it is. How hard, how challenging parenting
and
is.
And what a massive job it is.
In a different way. Yeah. How your life is turned upside down.
I am mind blown by the scale of this job. It actually blows my mind how much there is in it. You know, because it's overwhelming, isn't it, sometimes? And each stage brings another challenge and a problem, and you move and you get out of babies and you get toddlers and you get this and then you get teens.
And even into their 80s, they've got different problems that are as a result of things that we have presented in our lives. You know,
they never stop worrying.
The different level of worry, different conditions, different situations, and it never stops. And so...
You're a parent until you die. You're a parent till the end, watching out for them, trying to be a good parent. It's our life's work, lads, isn't it? I mean, everything else is secondary, really.
By the by, yeah. It's when you recognize yourself in your own kids. So the things that I've been getting cross with either of my two about, whatever it is. And then mid sort of me telling them off, realizing, oh, that's exactly what I still do, but on an adult level. Like their impatience, or their, they're flaring up because they're getting frustrated with something, so it comes out in an angry way. Or it's like, oh no, that's me, that's my traits, actually.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's what we're always watching ourselves, aren't we? Funnily enough, I was having this conversation with my best friend, whose children are very, very competent. She's in a unique situation in that her kids go from aged 30 something down to 16, because she had two relationships and two children very young, and then two more later on. But all of her children are, I would say, very confident. And we were having a walk the other day, and I said, how did you pull that off now? What did you do? I'm always asking people for their parenting tips. I never stop. And she said, at the time, she said, I was studying reality therapy, and the ethos of it was that you don't criticize your children. Now, she said, there's a flip side to that, in that I think, she said, they're very a bit relaxed with me, and they'd be quite happy to give me a fair amount of lip. But the positive side of that is that they're incredibly competent human beings. But that ethos was, you don't criticize your children. That's hard one, isn't it?
Oh, that's very hard.
The very fine line.
I mean, that immediately
line.
Fills me with a huge amount of guilt, because I just like have gone like through my checklist in the head going,
yeah, but you see, reprimanding them and teaching them boundaries is not the same as criticizing. This is the thing. It's a very fine line, isn't it? And I think we often cross it into criticism when we don't mean to. You're never tidying your room, as opposed to just constantly reiterating, I'd like you to go and tidy your room now. Do you know what I mean? You never do, or you never do this, or you don't do that. That's the criticism.
It's interesting that saying about not being critical to your children. We are terrible self-critics, and maybe that's tied in with how we then relate to our kids. Because is it more of a reflection on how we're feeling about ourselves or our parenting? And it gets sort of... put onto our children, or put onto our parenting style, you know, because I think most people are self-critics. We all give
self-criticism is dreadful. It's
a really damaging voice in your head. It's exhausting, and it chips away at you. So it's interesting, you know, saying we shouldn't criticize our kids, which I wholeheartedly agree with, but we in turn shouldn't criticize ourselves.
I'm very prone. I would be very prone to that now. It's interesting because I'm going to make a bigger effort to not. I find myself nagging an awful lot.
And I do. Yeah, I know, but it's hard, because we nag because, generally speaking, kids don't do the thing you've asked them to do the first time you ask them to do it. So you have to say it again, and they still haven't done it. Then you ask them again. And if you've said it three times, then you're nagging. But I mean, my children.
And the fifth time you shout it.
And the fifth time. And the fifth time you shout it. Exactly. Norm in our household. That's the norm. So what are you going to do then? You know.
I know myself if I'm, you know, having a stressful day. It does feed into how I'm going to talk to Lewis, right?
Oh yeah, you haven't taken out on your family.
Yeah, you haven't cleaned your room today, and I'm pissed off about it more today than I would have been 2 days ago. But I tell him that I'm like, my patience is very thin today, and I need you to do the things you need to do. So
that does he respond to that then? Does he hear that?
He knows because I'm not. Shouty with him, but when I'm going to, he wants to avoid that. So it's, but I kind of warn him.
You see, I think there's an awful lot of techniques, parenting techniques. This is why I kind of feel, why are we not all doing a parenting course? Like, I kind of feel like this is something that should be a part of life, that everybody does a parenting course. Simple little things like, you know, I've learned that apparently when you tell a toddler to do something, you then ask them, what did I just ask you to do? So if you say, I want you to put the thing away, and they're ignoring you, you go, Rosie, what did I just ask you to do? You get them to repeat back to you what you've asked of them, because they're not hearing it. And when you ask them to repeat it back to you, they'll take it in. All those tiny little, that are just psychology, simple stuff, but... And I find myself saying, stop shouting a lot to one of my kids. I'm going, stop shouting. And I know that you're meant to say, speak in a normal voice, please. Just speak in it. You do it yourself. You lower your own voice and you say, speak in a normal voice, please. And so going, stop shouting. It's again, it's a criticism. It's a kind of a pushing down. So anyway, it's a minefield, but all those little tiny
tips. But it's like what you're saying, Liz. It's like an age old joke, isn't it? That you would never do any other job. You'd never take on any other job without any training or, you know, any practice experience or a degree or whatever it is. Yes, parenting, you go into, you might read one or two, you know, what section you're expecting.
But I absolutely agree with you.
Nothing.
You're going on what you... So, and that's all very well and good if what you saw was amazing and that all of our parents did their best, you know, and we were loved and all of that. But I'm quite sure they also too would have loved a little bit of training, you know, of some kind. Like, it's just makes sense.
But it's totally different though, and it's all so circumstantial, right? And also every household is different, and everything that comes into every family has repercussions on how people are parenting at any given day. The tools are great.
They won't make it perfect, Esther, but they help.
It's trying to remember them in the moment, isn't it? When you're tired, when, you know, something flares up and it's happening in the moment, and to go mentally go, oh, now what was that technique? I must apply it now. This is the moment. That's a very difficult thing to do because you're
very
react. We react and it's instantaneous.
Yeah. When I react and when I blow up, I am filled with self-loathing. My day is destroyed. I'm like so angry with myself for losing my shit. I'm just
and
like,
it stays with you. That shit stays with you for hours. Yeah.
Why couldn't you just walk away, take a breath? And that is that's the most important thing, I think. When it's very heated, you literally step away. Even the count to 10, as my friends used to say to me, Jesus, do the count to 10, love. You walk away, you count to 10, take your breath, go, disappear, close the bathroom door and spend 5 minutes in there until you reevaluate and go, you are the parent here. You know, that's what I often have to remind myself.
Yourself. Yeah.
That's the child over there. They don't know. You know better. You are the older one. So cop on to yourself. You know, when you just lose your shit. It's
totally.
But in terms of asking people, I remember just something came to my mind there. I do, whenever I meet confident people, even as young adults or whatever, if I happen to know their parents or meet their parents, I always say, come on, tell me your top parenting tips. And I've had heard the most common one always being keep them close. Most people have said to me, keep them close, keep them very, stay very close, you know, watch them, let them stray too far. And it's just interesting. I kind of do buy that until they get a point where you go, I have to go and live my life. That's fine. And they get to a certain age. But when I was shooting Moonboy, Chris O'Dowd's mother is a really interesting woman. And she is a therapist. I can't remember whether she's a psychotherapist or but she's a therapist of some kind, anyway, psychology. And I would say Chris is one of the most confident human beings I've ever met. And I had a great conversation with her. My kids were very little at the time. And I said to her, come on, you've had four. I said, give me your top parenting tip. And she said to me, I did a parenting course when Chris was very little, having already raised three, because he was the youngest, which I found fascinating. And she said, I still just felt I wasn't good enough at it. So I did the parenting course when he was little. And she said to me, he probably was the one who benefited the most. And she said, but her treatment was not unlike the reality therapy, which is don't criticize them, was, she said, you treat your children like they're a friend. You wouldn't shout at your friend. You wouldn't talk down to your friend or criticize. You treat them like how you would treat a friend. That's how you treat them. So there you go. The parenting course.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, yeah, I'd highly recommend it. And did I do one? Did I? No.
Did you write on the list, Stephen?
I do read a lot. Oh, it lodged in my mind for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Our very dear friend, Alison Gleeson, has her own company, Raising Parents, which I think is a great name. And she does workshops and on, again, various aspects of the challenges of parenthood.
Yeah, she is fabulous. And we should mention what it is, what her...
Raisingparents.co.uk. Yeah, and she's amazing. And she does all those techniques.
She's brilliant.
And you can see she's practical. A brilliant parent. Like, yeah. I watch her, you know, she's...
Sure.
She's a master of the parenting.
Yeah, she really clear. Is. She really is. And she's and it's all about communication, how she communicates with kids, how she listens and how she communicates with them. And as a result, her three are excellent communicators.
Oh, Jesus, I need to do a course. Let's, oh, God. Never too late. I'll do it now.
Put it on the list.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Joking sort of aside, now I think that I've got a taster for what it's like to be working again, properly working. I'm only back a few days and... You know, it's an adjustment getting back into the doing mum at home thing again. She's like, oh, this is what I'm doing now.
This old thing. There's still another wash to put on.
And you spilled that all over the clean thing. Okay. Oh, now you're at another change of clothes. Okay. Yeah. All that. Yeah. It's
the element of domestic slavery in parenting is it's really dull. The constant washing of clothes and drying and folding and putting away.
Yeah, it's really fucking boring.
Actually, I wanted to, on the subject of the domestic slavery, I wanted to ask you about your feelings on having a cleaner. And do you have one? Did you have one? Because I recently got mine back, having not had her here for the COVID duration.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So therefore, the domestic slavery, and I'm very aware, and I'm sure there'll be people listening now, this is a very privileged sort of middle-class thing, although I think a lot more people have cleaners than used to have, would we say? Is it considered a luxury, really, anymore?
To a lot of people, it still would.
Yes, definitely. I don't have a cleaner, and I cannot wait to have one again. I have had one.
You've had cleaners in the past, yeah.
Yeah.
And Eva?
Yes. Yeah, we do. We do. We have one, and we've had one for ages, actually. And she's brilliant.
And a good cleaner, because I've had, I've been so lucky. My last couple of cleaners have just been phenomenal. Like, this is the statement I'm going to make about the cleaner. I have said to Steve, I will leave you before I will leave her, you know, before I let her leave me. Like, it's not happening. I can't be without the cleaner. I just can't, because I find the domestic, it's not like when you have a cleaner, you get to stop cleaning. It is still constant picking up, washing, folding, picking up, emptying the dishwasher, you're taking it, filling it, taking it. You're constantly cleaning. The cleaning doesn't stop. You just get a little break of one day where maybe the big jobs like the bathrooms get done and the sheets get changed.
Exactly.
And of all of the jobs, the changing of duvets is not something I can do. I actually can't do it. I lose my shit.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I can't. Holding on to corners and trying to put on duvets is my idea of hell on earth.
You turn inside out, you get the corners.
And then you put it flappy, flappy, flappy.
You're just filling me so full of so much horror. I swear to God, that's damned.
No, it's washing floors. That's what I now hate washing floors. So that's the.
But don't do it, love. I mean, just don't.
I don't need to. She comes every Wednesday. I will Hoover once a week. Every day with the kids. Yeah. I'll Hoover, but the floors will get washed once a week. I'm not doing the floors anymore.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, I feel like people, there's an attitude. People have an attitude to a cleaner. Some people feel it's wrong somehow that they're, you know, somebody's being subservient cleaning. I know people who go, I can't have somebody in my house cleaning my things. I'm like, Jesus, are you out of your mind? Like, you know, every particularly if you've got kids and you're a parent, everybody needs help.
It's like worth every penny. Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people who say that they can't afford it. And my argument against that is like, okay, I would go without a lot of things before I would go without a cleaner. I would go without a new coat. I would go without any of those nice things before I go without me cleaner. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's like, and I kind of look at people who go, oh, we're getting a massive TV now screen for Christmas, and that's maybe 300 or 400 quid. That'd be your cleaner paid there for the year practically. Do you know what I mean? And the load off you, like, just to have one day in the week where you walk in. Jesus, the glory of it.
The first time I got my own cleaner was when Lewis was born and I was working full time. So I was not in the house. Ellie was the stay-at-home dad and Lewis was a newborn. So I would leave the house every morning at 8:30 and go and work in a house that had 3 full-time cleaners every single day. It was
three every day.
Two every day.
And it was a huge house, presumably.
Yeah. Two every day and a third that would come in twice a week to do, you know, other jobs.
Deep cleaning.
So,
glorious. That's my dream.
And so then I would come home having worked in a house that was constantly immaculate. And I would come home to our apartment. And when I'd walk in the front door, there would be a trail of bottles all the way over, like 7
baby bottles
all the way
vodka, over. Not vodka,
baby bottles of milk all the way over on the floor, and it would lead to Ellie where he's sitting on the couch holding Lewis, feeding him a bottle, and the place would be trash. Now, normal, of course, you've got a baby and everything, but the place was just trashed. And there was no way that I was ever going to expect him to A, look after the baby all day, and then have the wherewithal to tidy the house. And I just, one day I went, you know what? We're going to get a cleaner. And the day she came for the first time and I opened the door, I was like, oh my God, I nearly cried. The cushions, the way she fluffed, she put them in, like, there was like a little thing that she did, like,
thing,
you know,
in the middle.
Little thing in the middle, but more so, like, she went above and beyond. And I walked in and it was like, we are never letting this go. Like, this to me is, I need this. And he needed it too, because he was, you know, he was with Lewis all day long, 12 hours a day with a newborn.
And actually, you know, on the subject of the tidy house, right, I think now that people have become, with the Instagram life has made people obsessed with the tidy house, you know, everything, because it always looks so beautiful when it's clean and tidy and you want it to be like that, but it's not practical. You've got to live in your house. Like yeah. you have to make a mess. Kids have to make a mess.
Yeah, that's now, that's for the Instagram story, that image. I mean, that's all, it's bullshit, right? That people's houses aren't like that all the time. They're like that for a photo and then they turn around the other way and the rest of the room is an absolute, you know, bomb site, I think.
Yeah, but
I mean, I live in a small house. And it's open plans, a kitchen, sitting room. It's like it's one big room, really. Mm. And so there's kids' toys. There's like, it's, if we don't constantly tidy, then there's just, you're stepping over things, you're tripping over things. And I find it very stressful. It's a place that it'll inevitably get messy at some point of the day, but it really adds to my stress levels if I have to live amongst it for, you know, for any length of time. So we are constantly lifting things up, putting them away, you know, things get pulled out again. And it's just, and that's, I suppose, going back to the, how quickly you start to resent the domestic slavery aspect of motherhood, because it's nonstop. So
cleaners are
amazing. I think, you know, they are worth every penny if you have it, but the rest of the days of the week you're still at it all the time, aren't you? Because if you don't, you're just living in,
I could do it all day and nothing else. I could,
but like our mothers did, like my mother got her cleaner for the first time maybe 5 years ago, I'm thinking, it's not that long ago, and she comes once every 2 weeks, and you know, she does the hoovering and she just helps my mother with the jobs that she can't
bathrooms.
Do and clean, and like, you know, my mother's like, you know, she's in her 70s, but the point is that she has been trying to tell some of her friends, you have to do this, like it'll change your life, but like, well, she didn't do it until like some, like 5 years ago, whereas I'm at a place where already, like I would get one in a heartbeat, and we say it all the time, like it's one of those things that I love to get again. The fact that our mothers did it.
But here's the thing, Esther, your mother would have had disposable income. So it must have been a cultural thing. Was it, why did it not happen? Like my mother had a cleaner. Well, I'm going to say cleaner. It was possibly a childminder who also cleaned. But there was always somebody, for as long as I can remember, coming in to help.
Right.
There was always some help. Now they did have, they could afford it. And then I remember the years where they couldn't afford it, but I still think there was a cleaner. I think my mother must have been made the same way I am, which is like, I can forgo lots of other things, but the domestic stuff, I'm not letting go of that. And I hear people say, no, we definitely can't afford it. I think, can you not? Like a lot of people would throw 50 quid on a round of drinks without batting an eyelid, but they'll tell you they can't afford a cleaner. Now, I would forgo the round of drinks. I just wouldn't be arsed. To me, it's the best gift you could give any domestic person, whether it's a man or a woman, the person who's at home doing the child minding or whatever, that's the best possible gift you could give them. It's just a little bit of help.
Yeah.
A few hours once a week. It's not a lot to ask, is it? Considering your friends there had somebody in every day of the week. And that's my dream. I'd love somebody every day of the week. I would love it. An hour, 2 hours, just a quick whoo. We're delighted. Go out for me coffee, me walking by the time I come back. Ooh, magic happens.
Lovely.
I always pay my cleaners very well, you know, the best rate I can afford, the top rate and a bit more, whatever I can afford to give, and I give it, like, to, you know, I'm so appreciative. I'm like, I genuinely don't think I appreciate anything quite as much as this.
But do you do that very, I don't know if it's very, I don't think it's just a very Irish thing, maybe it's a very proud thing, or you do a little tidy before they come?
A little tidy. I do an absolutely massive tidy. Yeah. But it's the organized. There's a lot of organizing to do before they come. Like, I usually take out the sheets I want them to put on the bed. So I'm not asking her to find sheets. So I want this on that bed, I want those on that bed. Sometimes I strip the beds, but also there's a lot of shit to put away, because they're not going to know where it goes. So yeah, there's a I regularly do a massive tidy, unless I'm gone to work, in which case sometimes I just, it's random. I just have to go. And I'm I am mortified. I usually don't leave the place. Yeah. So I guess what I'm asking, what I'm getting from them is the deep clean, like the bathrooms and the those jobs that just take time, big time. Yeah. Sometimes you're in the mood to clean, you know, and that's fine. You go, okay, I'm going to go at this. But Jesus,
just before my period, I go, I have a deep clean. That's why I get the gloves come out, the scouring cream come out, the scourers come out. There's brushes, there's sprays, and I have a good old scrub of the place. And it's like, well, oh, that's must be
so funny that it's around that time. Is it because you're feeling a bit dirty and you're going, oh God, I'm clean.
I get into this, I find it sort of therapeutic or something. I feel like I need to clean, and it's a different level of cleaning. You know, like, as we say, the normal cleaning happens all the time, every day anyway. There's no escaping that. It's a different level of cleaning.
Do you think it's anger? Do you think it's anger?
It's resentment.
I don't have a cleaner, so I do that once a week. And when I'm in that zone of I have to clean because this is what has to be done now, the boys just leave the house. They go, okay. Ellie just takes Lewis out.
She's off.
Yeah. And as you said, it's very therapeutic. And I go, okay, all I need is 2 hours to do the deep clean, but it's done once a week. And then I listen to
that's whatever. Good going, 2 hours.
Yeah. Because it actually doesn't take that long. You know, we think it takes longer than it actually does, but it's just.
No, absolutely. You're right. In 2 hours, I mean, my gorgeous cleaner comes for 3.
Yeah.
And that sometimes might include a bit of ironing. I don't have very much ironing. I don't buy things that need to be ironed, generally speaking, few shirts. But that's like, wow, with the time she leaves, I mean, the gaff is sparkling. I'm ready to have people over for dinner. Like, this is, and that's the other beauty. If you're getting a cleaner, it must be Thursday or Friday that they come. So then you're like, will we have people over for the weekend? Because before that, you don't want anyone in your house. You know, like, if you want a clean house, ask people over. That's my other thing. Oh, my God,
you have to.
My mother used to do this thing where she would say, the guests are coming. They're coming in half an hour. And it was just a thing that she would tell herself. Just a trick that she did. She's like, the guests are coming. The guests are coming. And we'd all go around the house. The guests are coming. The guests are coming. To help clean.
Yes, so really funny.
Yeah.
Whereas I actually invite guests to get myself to clean. I say, I'm going to have a dinner party because that's the only way I'm going to empty those boxes and move all that shit from there to there.
SJ, did you grow up then thinking, why are we always let down by people? Our guests never turn up. They never.
Eventually, we cottoned on. We knew the trick and then we all got into it. Yeah.
Come here to me. I've just remembered something. When I was, I had a gorgeous cleaner, my previous one. I've had a lot of cleaners, I might as well tell you. I think you can tell. But anyway, I had this one who was fabulous and she left me. She left me and she said, I can't come. I think she might have been going back to her Poland or somewhere. You'd be hard pressed now, by the way, to find an Irish cleaner. Very hard pressed. They're all your Eastern Europeans. I don't know how we'd manage without them. And all of these people who aren't keen on having non-nationals in the country, try and find yourself a cleaner or any kind of domestic help and you'd be well stuck. But anyway, this one was leaving and I was desperate. I was like, oh no, I must have had guests coming. And I thought, oh God, no, I need my cleaner on Friday. I think I was working. I was on a job. I was on a tidy job. So I was basically gone from morning till night. I just needed a cleaner for my own head. So she said to me, I'll tell you what, she said, my friend will come. She doesn't have a lot of English, but I'll explain, tell her what to do. So I said, okay, fine. And I leave a key out for her. And I remember making this arrangement. I left a key. I told my cleaner, I'm going to leave the key under the flower pot, third flower pot in. In fact, I think I actually was under a barbecue lid. I probably shouldn't say these things. I won't be doing it again. but I think it was under my barbecue lid that I left the keys for a pot. Anyway, these were the instructions. And off I went to do my job. And I completely forgot that the new cleaner was coming, right? I just went to work and I got a break around 11 o'clock and there was about 25 missed calls And I thought, oh, Jesus. And you know the way you're straight away fly into a panic. Something is wrong. One of the schools are calling me. One of the kids, there's something wrong. And then I realized, oh, Jesus, this was the new cleaner's number. What's the problem? So I ring her. I go, hi, Michaela. Hi. And she goes, oh, hello, Dee. Hello, Dee. It's okay. I have problem. I couldn't find your house. I couldn't get in. I couldn't find the key. So I said, okay. And I was explaining to her. And she said, no, it's okay. It's okay. I am inside now. It's the house with the red door. Yeah. And my heart, I said, no, no. I'm the house that's opposite the house with the red door. I'm across the road from that. It's quite hard to find my house. So I always say to people, it's directly opposite that. Oh, okay. Where are you now? I am in the, house. I have cleaned the kitchen. I have cleaned the kitchen. I have cleaned the hall. I said, and my straight away, I said, get out, get out, get out of the house. I said, leave the house. I said, where did you find the key? You say, I said, my friend told me under the flower pot. I go around looking under all the pots. I can't find them. Eventually, I find under one of the lids, I find the key and I go in. And I straight away, I went into another panic because I thought, going to be accused of robbing the place. This is my first thought was, if anything's missing or anything, you know, I'll be accused of robbing them. So I said, get out of the house quickly. So she left and I had to describe to her to go across. She had to put the key back, close the door and come across the road. So whoever went home to that house that night went home to a sparkling kitchen, absolutely sparkling, paid for by Muggins. That's unbelievable. Well, what was unbelievable was every house in Ireland obviously has a key under a fucking pot somewhere. So, you know, good luck to all the robbers. If you look hard enough, you will find a key.
Thank you for listening to the Deirdre O'Kane podcast with me, SJ, and Eva B. If you enjoyed this week's episode called The Guests Are Coming, The Guests Are Coming, please, please tell all your friends. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed. Follow us on Spotify. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple. All these things really, really help to keep our show going. But most of all, thanks so much for listening.
This podcast is powered by the Acast Creator Network.